morning and welcome to the...
There we go. Good morning and welcome to the April 17th meeting of the Portland City Council. Council, come to order. And will you please call the roll, Carla?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Hales?
Here. All of us are shocked and saddened by what we've experienced as a country this week, this vicious and cowardly and heartless act of violence in Boston. So I'd like to ask us today to begin with a moment of silence to remember the victims, their families, all who love them, and all who love the great city of Boston. Let's be silent together in prayer and hope for those that still need to heal. Thank you. We have some communication items on the council this morning, on the calendar this morning. We'll address those first, and then we have an excellent presentation on fair housing with some honored guests here that we're very pleased to have here this morning. So let's take the communications items first, please, Carla.
Item 331, request of Christine Finlayson to address council regarding Roseway Heights Sun School.
Good morning and welcome. You have 3 minutes. Just state your name into the record and have your say. Good morning.
My name is Christine Finlayson, and a few weeks ago I asked my children to write letters to all of you and draw pictures for the council and the mayor, and I was really struck by this one that my daughter drew, the huge sun on it, and she said, "Sun helps us grow. Please don't cut our sun school." And sun really does help kids in our community. I'm here today to talk about the Roseway Heights Sun School, which is one of the three schools on the chopping block this year. But I do want to speak on behalf of all of the sun schools because I've seen as a parent firsthand the value that it has for children and for families. Just to give you an idea of how our sun school impacts our community, using Roseway Heights as an example, our sun school offers about 80 after-school classes each quarter. They cover sports, art, computers, music, and academic enrichment. Over half of our school, more than 300 students, participate in these classes every week. There are community classes for adults as well, starting with fitness boot camp at 6 a.m. and ending with evening classes such as intro to iPhones and iPads and cooking dinner on a dime. The Roseway Heights Sun School serves as our neighborhood community center, and we love it because we can walk there. It's right in our neighborhood. During the winter, the program hosted 22 youth basketball teams, including 8 girls teams. And our Sun program also offers a very vibrant summer camp at Glen Haven Park, which is in at Northeast 82nd and Siskiyou. It's 100% outdoors, and during the 8 weeks of camp each summer, it provides about 1,000 spots for kids to go to summer camp and learn about art, nature, science, and sports. Busy kids are happy kids, as I'm sure we all know, and it keeps them out of trouble, which is wonderful. It's not just the registered campers who benefit from these camps. The Sun School Summer Program also serves about 5,000 free lunches to the Northeast Portland community each year. Every day at noon, Glen Haven Park is filled with kids from daycare, with neighborhood families, and children in need of a healthy meal. So those are all reasons that the Sun School is very important to us. The school has also helped to fill critical gaps in school funding. When our PE got cut to once a week, Sun stepped in and started offering track and field, cross country, basketball classes, dodgeball classes, skateboarding. When budget cuts meant that our computer instruction at our school got eliminated for kindergartners through third graders and cut to once a week for fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, Sun also stepped in. They're helping our kids learn basic technology so they can compete in high school and the workforce. Without Sun at our school, many kids will lose their access to computers. And that's critical for these 254 students that come from low-income households. It's also a safe place for kids to gather after school. They don't have to head home at 2:15 when school gets out, but they can be there with other kids and sign up for classes such as Girl Power and Boys Mentoring, science, theater and art, music, sports, and computers. We love our Sun School program, and we hope your budget will allow it to stay open. The benefits to Portland families are huge. It's so great, we think every school should be a Sun School.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Good morning, everybody.
Yes!
Good morning. Okay, thank you. Next one, please.
Item 332, request of David Berkson to address council regarding proposed Sun cuts.
Good morning. Welcome.
My name is David Berkson. I'm grateful for the opportunity to testify today. Thanks to all of you for hosting this field trip. Our kids are happy to be here. Our son Nicholas is a 9-year-old student at Buckman Elementary, one of the schools at risk of having its Sun program eliminated entirely under the current budget proposal. I have been a teacher for 16 years, and I cannot put it more bluntly. Sun is the best. It is necessary, it is essential, and it is a model of excellence to be preserved and built upon, not eliminated. Our principal, Brian Anderson, states, because of major cuts to our budget over the years, Buckman has virtually no additional support in place for struggling students. Positions such as reading specialist, math support specialist, educational assistants, special education paraeducators have been cut. We no longer have PE. In fact, there are days in which the only structured school time exercise my son gets are the activities that are provided by Sun. Mr. Anderson concludes, the possibility of losing Sun renders us unable to support students who desperately need help. Buckman has a population of 500 kids. More than 4 out of 5 of those children are served by the Sun program. The scope and variety of its services are stellar. Write night, math night, tutoring, behavioral mentoring, homework club, and 50 after-school classes a week. Sun provides help for families struggling with financial, domestic, medical, and substance abuse issues. Buckman Sun serves more than 450 kids and is somehow managed and coordinated by only 2 part-time staff members. It also keeps struggling families in the workforce, including mine. Eliminate Sun, and I am one of many parents who will have to drastically reduce my work hours and be forced to bring my child to work with me on many of the school closure days. I wonder if Sun has become a victim of its own success. Sometimes when a program works incredibly well, it's hard to see its necessity. Isn't the point of a social services program to create an environment where children are thriving, to keep them engaged and challenged and happy? Portland's public schools are reeling from years of deep and painful cuts. There isn't a single school that doesn't need Sun. And you have said so much yourself in the 2012 Portland Plan, which states, the Sun service system has a strong record of promoting educational success and family self-sufficiency. Now, it would be hard enough to shoulder a cut to any Sun site, but at least for Buckman, the current budget proposal risks its elimination at a time when our kids are being asked to shoulder more. Last year, this body made the right choice by preserving an essential and unique service. And for the sake of the kids in this room, many of whom have contributed artwork testimony for you to read and look at, and for the sake of the kids that they represent, I urge you to repeat that act of good judgment and make no cuts to Sun. I thank you for your time.
Thanks for being here. Thanks very much. Welcome, kids. I'm glad we were the field trip today. Thank you for being here. Next one, please, Carla.
Item 333, request of Barbara Boos to address council regarding ordinances.
Barbara?
My name is Barbara Boos, and my first ordinance request is for the Bureau of Development Services to build drainage barriers between older homes too close together. And this will also serve as root barriers. And enclosed is a design submitted by Dexter Bacon, who helped to also set up Metropolitan Learning Center. This is galvanized, corrugated metal. It's like 3 feet high to 4 feet that goes into the earth, and then there are river rocks for better drainage, and then you can have a French sock, and from which you can build a fence in between the for the foundation in between the older buildings in question. Also enclosed is his phone number, and anybody is welcome to call him. And this is a very good proposal for the city of Portland to maintain older buildings. Number two, the deputy chief, Marco Benetti, told me for at least 2 or 3 years, the fire department can only put out meth cooks on fire and or exploding. Meth cooks in homes are private and basically legal. Mitch Oriana on street tests air 3 weeks after meth cooks, and this process proves ineffective. Will you please reinstate the fire department as hazmat team for complete personal property inspection during the meth cooks? Is this an ordinance? And also, meth smokers have in their smokes, like tobacco, marijuana, black tar, heroin, and herbs, like a cocktail, and the fumes are sickening to all living beings. The problem here is that the police are not in a position to use the sensors to test them adequately, as the sensor equipment on the fire department truck on the hazmat. And this is a problem because when the person becomes an addict, sometimes they engage in children trafficking, and the picture enclosed of these two children were on my sidewalk, and I didn't know that they were missing. And it is such an eerie feeling that I have to have looked into this child's eyes and not known what to do. A woman was with her. She had a Washington license plate. I did not check it. I mean, it was too quick. But I had seen her before on Northeast 26th with lots of babies. There was also a Texas license plate. I enclosed it for your view. That Texas license plate has shown up 3 times when kids have been deposited. And it breaks my heart that Trinity Grant so courageously spoke for herself and her brother. And I didn't get it because I didn't know about child trafficking being number 3 in the country in Portland, and the drugs are causing it.
Thank you for bringing this to our attention. I appreciate that. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. And the police have also suggested that I have a type of video camera, so if they have an extra one that's left around, I'd appreciate using it, because the neighbors who've just moved in have been at my door between 3 times in the first week between midnight and 4 in the morning, and it's very traumatizing for them to be ringing the doorbell.
Well, thank you. Thanks for coming. Thanks for letting us know. I appreciate
thank you
giving us this. Thanks.
334, request of Alexia Garcia to address council regarding budget and youth programs.
Good morning. Welcome.
Hello. So my name is Alexia Garcia, and I'm a senior at Lincoln High School, and I'm involved in both of the student unions in Portland, and I'm here today to talk about cuts to youth. So first, I'd like to start off by saying thank you for supporting the youth pass for another school year. That's so important to our students, and I mean, there's 12,000 high school students in Portland Public Schools that are going to be benefiting from that. So first off, a huge thank you from the students for that. But I'm sorry to say that it's not going to be good enough for this year. And we're still seeing cuts to youth. We're seeing the students here representing the Sun schools. We're seeing security guards and Multnomah Youth Commission be called into question. And at this point, like, we are not in a position in which we can cut these programs. And I hate standing up here and talking on behalf of the youth, because I feel that I'm being pinned against the other groups that are being cut. And I'd like the conversation to be more about how we can raise revenue and how we can find ways to sponsor all these programs, because currently some of the most vulnerable populations are looking to be cut. And I think there is a way, there is a solution in which we can fund all these programs, and it's going to be about finding a way to raise revenue, pulling money out of our reserves, seeing if we can tax the corporations that are currently getting away with tax breaks, and just finding a solution, because we're not in a position with our economy this low to be cutting youth, to be cutting low-income people and some of the most vulnerable populations. And beyond that, I think I'm a product of No Child Left Behind, of constant cuts to youth. I've never seen a school year go by in which we don't come back the next school year and have to get like 5 more desks in our classroom to fit all the students, or have our music programs cut. So I'd really look to find a solution, because I know there is a solution, and I know that we really need to be supporting our citizens, and as youth, we need to find a solution to fund our education and to fund these programs. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Thanks for being here. Okay, one more, Barbara.
Item 335, request of Kelly Pergan to address council regarding the Sequoia Grove in Pier Park.
Good morning. Welcome.
Excuse me. Good morning. My name is Kelly Pergandy. As you announced, I live in St. John's. I realize that in the past few weeks, you have all heard from members of our group of concerned citizens regarding the impact on the giant sequoia as a result of the new Pier Chimney Bridge construction. We have also spoken about the necessity to have a completed ADA trail that will allow access for all to the new bridge. And I appreciate your attention again today. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for attending the recent St. John's Neighborhood Association general meeting as an observer. As you no doubt recall, at the meeting, a passionate debate took place among members of our community. We have good news to report. After that meeting ended, our group was approached by the NP Greenway Group, requesting that we join them at the budget hearing last week. We attended that meeting as a unified voice to request funding for a completed ADA trail from the new bridge through the park. In the near future, we'll be joining with Friends of Pier Park, the St. John's Neighborhood Association, and NP Greenway Group to discuss how best to accomplish the task of making the bridge accessible while also considering the integrity of the Sequoia Grove. So neighborhood unity is becoming a reality. I'm here today to impress upon you how important it is to consider other options for the design of the 65-foot trail section on the south side of the bridge. PPNR stated that they never considered any alternatives regarding this specific 65-foot section. We have ideas that we feel would resolve the design challenges that have only been recently identified and acknowledged. As you stand in the grove, you can see that it was planted in two sections, front and back. The trees in the front section were planted in a circle, and while we do not currently know the significance of the circle, it is unique, and it may even have historical significance. The 65-foot trail section, as it is currently drawn, lands right in the middle of this circle. For an ADA trail, compliant trail, to continue, it would need to go through several sets of trees. One of our proposed alternative routes for a completed ADA trail directs it between the two grove sections, keeping both intact and minimizing the number of trees affected. So the current 65-foot section design doesn't work well with this alternative route. Designing the trail in pieces simply doesn't make sense. If options for this trail section can't be considered at this time because of budget constraints, we ask that construction of this section be delayed until the end of the bridge project. By that time, there may be adequate funding available to redesign and the remainder of the trail. We are convinced that at least one of the several alternatives we want to propose would cost the same or considerably less than the current plan. When the project is completed, it will be part of Pier Park for many generations. The City of Portland and Portland Parks and Rec need to consider all possible options before construction of the 65-foot trail section. It is important that the entire trail from where the bridge touches Pier to its end be designed as a whole with careful consideration for practicality, tree health, grove integrity, and aesthetics. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your advocacy and for working with parks on these issues. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So this is Fair Housing Month, and I'd like to hold the consent agenda a while, and because we have some items to discuss there, and move immediately to the time certain.
Why don't we at least vote on consent?
Get the consent out of the way.
Everything at the end.
Okay, because I know there's one item to pull. All right, then let's go ahead and deal with consent and pull the item that I think Commissioner Fritz, you wanted to pull item number
343. I wanted to pull 344, and with the understanding that we'll take them up at the end of our agenda.
Okay. Any other items to be pulled from the consent agenda? If not, let's take a roll call on the remainder of the consent agenda.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And we'll set those two over until the end of the council calendar. And now I'm very pleased to turn this over to Commissioner Fish to talk about Fair Housing Month and to welcome our guests.
I'll read the item.
Please.
Item 336, proclaim April 2013 to be Fair Housing Month in Portland.
Thank you, Mayor and colleagues, and welcome honored guests as we celebrate Fair Housing Month 2013. Mayor Hales and I joined with local leaders this morning to welcome Deputy Assistant Secretary Sarah Pratt, whom we'll be hearing from shortly. She is our quarterback on fair housing issues at the federal level, but we were joined by all of our jurisdictional partners. And I think the message that came across loud and clear to me is that this community is united in its determination to end discrimination in housing and to remove barriers to opportunity. And it's just an honor to welcome such a high-ranking federal official as this community celebrates Fair Housing Month. Mayor, we have a presentation today that begins with a panel that's going to review a little bit of our progress. We're going to meet a remarkable young woman whose poster was selected this year as the featured poster of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, and I'm told she will be hanging around later to sign copies of the poster in English or Spanish at your and we're also going to screen a couple of the PSAs that have been prepared for our campaign this year. But I want to begin by welcoming our first panel and ask Tracy Manning, the director of the Portland Housing Bureau, Deborah Imza, executive director of Multifamily Northwest, and Nisha Saxena, the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee co-chair. And as they're getting seated, colleagues want to acknowledge that we've made steady progress since we approved in 2011 our Fair Housing Action Plan. And we do so because we have strong partners like Peggy McGuire of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon and Deborah Imza from the landlord community at Multifamily Northwest and our friends at HUD, at the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Attorney General's Office, the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The truth is no one of us can make a dent. We have to work together to make progress. We're united in that effort, and I'm very pleased to introduce our first panel, starting with Director Manning.
Thank you, Commissioner, Council. At the Portland Housing Bureau, we're working to ensure equitable access to housing in a couple of key ways. First, to remove discriminatory barriers to housing, but also to work to create opportunities and choice for people in our community and people in need. And those two approaches really go hand in hand. Our work is part of what we do in the whole Bureau. Everybody's got a part to play. Very excited to be able to highlight some of the partners that we work with here at the table and with us today. They do wonderful work in awareness and educational opportunities for landlords as well as tenants who need to learn their rights. And they help us strengthen our existing work, but also be creative and as Sarah Pratt challenged us, think out of the box about new ways to challenge housing discrimination. So very honored today to have the role to thank our partners, contributors to our fair housing efforts during the month of April. Multnomah County, of course, the City of Portland, City of Gresham, Multifamily Northwest, the Apartment Finder, National Fair Housing Alliance, and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. So without further ado, the co-chair of our Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, Nisha Saxena, and our Fair Housing Advocacy Committee and Portland Housing Advisory Commission member Deborah Imsey will give us details about what we're doing this month to celebrate Fair Housing Month.
Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you. It's good to be here. As a reminder, my organization members own or manage over 150,000 units in the region, and that might be one unit left to them by grandma, or it might be 18,000 units in the state. So they are all across the board in levels of experience and education. One thing that I was asked to comment on this morning is, why do I have a passion for fair housing? I have a passion for fair housing because my members house 35 to 40% of the population, depending upon what geographic region you're talking about. I get up in the morning to help them do the best possible job they can do, and that's where my passion lies regarding fair housing. Last year alone, we conducted over 55 fair housing related trainings in the state and hope to do more next year. I was quite inspired with our out-of-town guests this morning, and so that'll send me back to find more unique and innovative ways to get my members to think outside the box. And on that note, it is now my pleasure to introduce another member of the Portland Housing Advisory Commission, Nisha Saxena.
Thank you, Deborah. And I also just want to say I really appreciate Deborah's passion for fair housing and partnership in this area. And thank you all for your commitment to ending illegal housing discrimination. I'm an attorney with Disability Rights Oregon and co-chair of the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee. I was also asked to talk a little bit about my passion for fair housing. And just on a very personal note, my parents moved to the United States in 1967 and had a very difficult time. A few months before I was born, had a very difficult time finding housing in the city of Chicago, walked up and down the streets of Chicago, and had a really hard time finding an apartment. And that was kind of the beginning of my passion for this work. And then we see it every day with our clients. We get a lot of calls from people with disabilities having issues in housing. One of the most effective ways to combat housing discrimination is through outreach and education. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the education piece. Many people are not aware of fair housing laws and the various groups to which it applies. So some of the strategies that the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee is using is public service announcements in conjunction with the National Fair Housing Alliance and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The Fair Housing Council of Oregon has been doing readings at our local library branches. There are plans for radio and TV spots, a social media campaign, a fair housing website, and also just information distributed in multiple languages at libraries, parks, and local movie houses. So we're going to share now one of the public service announcements. So thank you.
Carla, can you help?
Bear with us a sec, Mayor and colleagues. We previewed this morning, but as we've learned, with the technology upgrade that we did at Council, it just seems chronic.
We're in big trouble.
And I always feel sorry for our presenters, because even when we rehearse them, there's something.
I've had my PowerPoint moments as well, so I can relate.
Fortunately, I have an expert in my household who helps me with all my computer technology issues. He's nine years old.
Some of the Sun Kids back.
Yeah, right, where the Sun Kids come on down.
Nope, Carla.
Carla, do you think when we do the Johnson piece later, we'll be able to get the sound? Okay. Yeah, no, I know.
Well, if you're looking for a movie file, it's that next one down in the list there, Carl.
We'll just show the video, and it looks like the sound file is missing.
Okay, nope.
So, and F. Okay. Can I say just a few words
about this?
Thank you. Sorry that you guys can't hear the sound. The Fair Housing Alliance, along with HUD, put together some really great words that are going to be distributed nationally about fair housing. They're very empowering. They're available on YouTube. And along with them are these images that are posters. We're going to be putting these up in the libraries, showing them in movie houses, and just getting the word out about how folks have the right to say something if they're experiencing discrimination. And Fair Housing Council of Oregon is a really great resource for them to have their complaint heard. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Kim. We have another video piece we're going to come back to in a moment, Carla. So we could come back to the council for a second. And there we go. Thank you, Kim. It's next my honor to introduce Ashley Robinson. Ashley was the winner this year of a poster competition, and her art was selected for the Fair Housing Council of Oregon's poster. Ashley, would you like to come forward with any special guest you're with and say a few words? And let me say that she is 11 years old. She attends Dunaway Elementary School. Why don't you come up with your mom and your sister? Grab a seat.
Bring reinforcements. Please. It's okay. Come on up.
Ashley is 11.
What?
She attends Dunaway Elementary. She enjoys art, music, dance, and, of course, most important, soccer. When she learned about housing discrimination in school, Ashley says she thought of her family's very diverse circle of friends and agreed with the importance of making sure that everybody feels equally valuable. By the way, she's available for autographs after her presentation, and she's joined by her sister and her mom. And Ashley, let's first give her a round of applause for her great work.
Ah.
Like, hold it up?
Yes, stand up.
Very great.
Wow, and we'll take a look at it, too. Look at that.
Good
wow.
Work.
Ashley, as the winner of the poster contest this year, you get the chance to say anything you'd like to your city council that is very, very, is very, very proud of you and what you've accomplished. So the microphone is yours.
I don't know what to say. Thank you for making me win.
For picking you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's actually the most eloquent thing we've heard in a long time. So, so thank you for joining us. And to her family and friends that are here, we are extremely proud of this young woman. So thank you. And thank you. Thank you. Well, in addition to Ashley, we have another VIP with us today. And that is HUD Deputy Assistant Secretary Sarah Pratt. Sarah, would you please come forward, and the mayor is going to introduce you.
We're very pleased to have Assistant Secretary Pratt here this morning because she is an advocate for this cause. She is an activist in making sure that the tools are in the hands of housing providers and attorneys and everyone else who has the responsibility of enforcing the law. And she's, as we heard earlier this morning in a conversation with her, she's a real believer in enlisting the private sector as a partner in solving these problems and providing housing opportunity for everyone. And I was really impressed by not just your energy and your knowledge, but by that spirit of let's get everybody together, working on this shared enterprise, solving problems, trying new things, examining old habits that maybe have caused discriminatory effects without people actively thinking about it. So you certainly got those of us who've heard you already actively thinking about it, and we're very pleased to have you here in Portland this morning. It's an honor for the city of Portland that you're here helping us celebrate Fair Housing Month. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, thank you so much for inviting me here today to celebrate the 45th anniversary of the passage of the Fair Housing Act with you. You know, it seems to me that there is no more fundamental American value than the opportunity to be able to choose where you live, to have access to housing through lending and through rental opportunities, through your home buying options, whether or not you make a lot of money, to have access to housing choices without discrimination because of the color of your skin or from because of where your parents came from, because you have a disability, because you have kids, because you're a male or a female. My work is to ensure that the rights included in the Fair Housing Act are enforced across the country, but it's also part of my job to make sure that we together are all part of the solution to discrimination. It is my office that funds the National Fair Housing Alliance to prepare these posters and public service announcements that you will see across the country and perhaps see on television as well over the years. It is part of my office's responsibility to encourage kids like Ashley and her family, folks here in the room, many diverse partners and voices, to come together to address the issues, the barriers that still people encounter because of discrimination. And those barriers are sometimes unequivocal and sometimes even quite unpleasant. And sometimes they might even be just an unexamined part of our life. As I said earlier this morning, Portland and its partners, from the people I saw in the room this morning, are working hard and going in the right direction. But this work is not easy. Change is not easy. Creating an environment that is safe and comfortable and diverse across communities is not an easy job, but I am convinced that you, Mr. Mayor, your commissioners, and all the partners I saw around the room today are up to the job. I congratulate you on this great celebration today and am very delighted to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Secretary, thank you. And also, we want to just salute the whole HUD team, from Secretary Donovan and your partner and colleague, John Tresvina, to Mary McBride and Robin Pritchard and all the frontline people from HUD here. We could not ask for stronger and more effective partnerships with the federal government, and we thank you for that.
We're delighted to partner with you. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Kim back to tee up our video. Since this is the 45th anniversary, our crack team went into the archives and they found some archival footage of President Johnson signing the Fair Housing Act of 1968. And we're going to run that, and then, Mayor, we're going to read a proclamation and then take a picture if we could.
On an April afternoon in the year 1966, I asked a distinguished group of citizens that were interested in human rights to meet me in the cabinet room in the White House. In their presence that afternoon, I signed a message to the Congress. That message called for the enactment, and I quote, of the first effective federal law against discrimination in the sale and the rental of housing in the United States of America. few in the nation, and the record will show that very few in that room that afternoon, believed that fair housing would in our time become the unchallenged law of this land. And now, at long last, this afternoon, its day has come. Now with this bill, the voice of justice speaks again. It proclaims that fair housing for all human beings who live in this country is now a part of the American way of life.
Thank you, Kim. I love that phrase, the unchallenged law of this land. And the voice of justice speaks again. On that note, it is my honor.
Hey, please.
There's a time and a place.
And this is
it. No, this isn't it.
It isn't it. And it is now my honor to read a proclamation in commemoration of the 45th anniversary. Thank you, Mayor. Whereas our community is committed to equal opportunity and housing choice for all. Whereas the theme of this year's National Fair Housing Month is Fairness Matters, or Fair Housing Now. And whereas the City of Portland and its partners are working together to combat discrimination and other impediments to housing choice. And whereas the City Council adopted Portland's first ever Fair Housing Action Plan in September of 2011, and established a Fair Housing Advocacy Committee to oversee its implementation. And whereas the plan calls for a combination of enhanced outreach and education, increased testing and enforcement, and an expanded supply of affordable housing options. And whereas the Portland Housing Bureau is working with landlords and tenants to increase choice for low-income renters citywide. And whereas under federal fair housing laws, Oregon civil rights statutes, and the Portland City Code, it is unlawful to discriminate on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, disability, familial status, national origin, marital status, sexual orientation, source of income, military status, gender identity, or history as a victim of domestic violence. And whereas 2013 marks the 45th anniversary of the signing of Title VIII of the Federal Civil Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act, and the 25th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act amendments of 1988, which frankly has special significance to me. And whereas the Fair Housing Act amendments ban discrimination against families with children and people with physical or mental disabilities and strengthen the enforcement of our laws, now therefore I, just in case there's any confusion, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim April 2013 to be Fair Housing Month in Portland and to encourage all residents to observe this month by joining the effort to promote fair housing for all because fairness matters. Congratulations. Here. Mayor, can we get a photograph and present that? Sarah Ashley, if you would join us. Sarah, we're going to present you with the original proclamation issued by the mayor today. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mayor, while we're getting ready, just to switch gears, I want to thank everyone at the Portland Housing Bureau, at the Office of Government Relations, and my office, who worked so tirelessly on this, particularly Danielle and Jamie, Sonia, Martha and Niels, and frankly everybody in a leadership position who worked tirelessly to bring this presentation to council. We're very grateful for their efforts. Kim McCarty. Kim.
Thanks very much. The work goes on. Okay, let's turn. We don't take public testimony on proclamations, but we'll turn to the first item on the regular agenda.
Item 351, amend contract with Brown and Caldwell, Inc. for additional work and compensation for the Southwest 86th Avenue Pump Station and Appurtenances Project number E09051 for $359,811.
Second reading, roll call.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Next item, please.
Item 352, amend agreement with Portland Streetcar, Inc. for vehicle engineering services related to streetcar vehicles being procured from Oregon Iron Works for the Portland Streetcar Loop Project and increase compensation by $270,384.
See, our project manager is here. Do we have a presentation this morning on this or just here to answer questions? So it's an emergency ordinance to authorize the additional funding. I think people already understand the reasons for this. Any reason for further council discussion? And then is there anyone that wants to testify on this item?
No one signed up.
Is this money coming from contingency?
Greg, you want to come up? And
Charlie, what number?
Oh, we're on 352.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Is this money coming, additional money coming from the contingency of the project?
That's correct.
Yeah. How much remains in the contingency after we approve this?
I believe about 1.6
million.
After this.
Okay. That's correct.
So we're on track in terms of the utilization of that contingency.
That's correct.
For the project.
Thank you.
Good. Okay. Thanks, Greg. Thank you, Vicki. Any further questions? Emergency ordinance. Roll call, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. 353.
Vacate a portion of Southwest Moody Drive north of Ross Island Bridge subject to certain conditions and reservations and rename a portion of Southwest Moody Drive.
Second reading, roll call.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. 354.
Implement the temporary suspension of system development charges for the construction or conversion of structures to accessory dwelling units.
Second reading and roll call.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. And 355.
Authorize acquisition of the Eagle Point property for park purposes.
I believe there's some revised language in front of us here, Mike. Is that correct? Could you come up and just explain that for us so we can take up
it?
The amended language?
I've got copies here.
Morning.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, so why don't you explain the original agreement and then the amendment, if you would.
Sure. Mr. Mayor, there's the amendment in front of you today makes a couple of changes. In the original ordinance, it asked that the funding for O&M of the Eagle Point property, if you choose to move ahead with that, would happen in the first bump after the acquisition. This moves it to the 2013-14 budget as part of our Cal target. That's primarily the main change.
Okay.
So moved. And that was at the request of this budget office.
Okay, so Commissioner Fritz has moved the amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call on adopting the amendment and having that before us.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. And any questions for staff on the ordinance as amended?
Are there any other changes?
Any other changes in the order? You mean another amendment, or
yes?
There's a in this amendment. There's a slight change from $1,250 per year to $1,875 per year. But
no, I understood that. But I thought that there was going to be an amendment regarding the house and the timing.
We can discuss that. I'm prepared to discuss that as you know during the Q&A after the presentation.
Okay, great. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mike Abate, Director of Portland Parks and Recreation. I'm joined today by Riley Whitcomb from our staff, Anton Vetterlein, the President of the Friends of Terwilliger. Also want to recognize Don Goldberg from Trust for Public Lands, who has been a key partner in this. This is a rather historic occasion. We have an acquisition, small but mighty, about 1 acre in size. But what makes this property special is that it's been on the city's radar for over 100 years, targeted for acquisition. And only recently, for the first time, has this property actually been up for sale. And I credit Anton and the Friends of Terwilliger for calling us. I don't know if it was the exact same day that they saw the for sale sign up, but they called us right away, and I think all of us recognize how significant that piece of property is. This is a wonderful view from 1894, a view from the Riverview Cemetery looking north. Obviously, you can see the Willamette River, and then you can see Eagle Point. That pointy mountain in the background is Mount St. Helens. 86 years before its eruption looked a little bit different. Eagle Point is a natural outcrop with a panoramic view of the Willamette River, Portland, and the Cascades. In 1903, the Parks Board engaged Olmsted Brothers, as you know, to outline a parks plan that included boulevards and parks. And included in their vision was a parkway that ran south from downtown and provided opportunities for pleasure drives and extraordinary views. The report recommended the acquisition of land needed for right-of-way for this parkway, and it described it as we need sufficient land for to ensure command of the views. And that was the kind of the public benefit that was seen in 1903, a place for viewing the city as it changed. No plans were prepared in 1903, but the proposal did call for this parkway that would run all the way down to the Riverview Cemetery. Speaking of that, a major portion of that destination, Riverview, was acquired 2 years ago by the city, over 100 acres, and another legacy part of this project. In 1912, the first plan for what was called the Hillside Parkway at that time was done. It was done by Emmanuel Miche, who was the first superintendent of parks for the city of Portland and came to us from the office of John Charles Olmsted. And it established that alignment. North is to the right on this slide, establishing this alignment from Sam Jackson Parkway all the way to Capitol Highway. The plan specifically highlights the desire to acquire, at that time, 4.3 acres of property at Eagle Point, which in 1912 would have been valued at about $8,000 or $10,000. And funds from a 1907 voter-approved park and boulevard bond measure were first and foremost for acquisition, and this was targeted to acquire in 1907. However, circumstances wasn't there, so I don't know how it all went down, but we acquired what is now Dunaway Park with those funds instead of Eagle Point. The Hillside Plan specifically highlights the desire to acquire those acres, and you can see in the box, I'm sorry, the 4.3 listed there. Mm-hmm. But moving forward to 1982, in 1982, we accomplished the Terwilliger Parkway Corridor Plan. And it affirmed the 1912 Hillside Parkway plan and also noted Eagle Point as an important feature. The recommendation in that plan was to clear, landscape, and improve Eagle Point as a scenic loop and viewpoint, and the corridor plan was adopted by Council in December of 1982. It did recommend acquisition of pedestrian right-of-way or an easement following the vacated portion of Southwest Lowell Lane. As you can see, it also has a house on it, and in 1982, it still had a house, and at that time, knowing that the city works with willing sellers, there didn't seem to be any opportunity to purchase the entire property, so that's why the right-of-way was identified for the viewpoint. Here's a current shot. This is a view of Eagle Point from the tram. The prominent and exposed nature of Eagle Point would really be significantly degraded if developed, and our land use would allow that property to be developed into seven residential lots. So you can imagine seven fairly high-priced homes could go onto that piece of property. As I mentioned, in summer 2012, friends of Terwilliger brought it to our attention that they had seen some for sale signs, and the friends have prepared an extensive history outlining many of the points that I just shared with you. They are wonderful partners, and as you know, last year we celebrated the centennial of Terwilliger Parkway. As soon as this sort of came up and we realized, my goodness, this is something that the city has wanted for such a long time, we recognized we needed to move very quickly. And because of the property ownership, the willing seller not being an individual but a trust, we knew that it was going to be a somewhat complicated deal. And so we asked the Trust for Public Lands to come aboard as a partner and to negotiate that acquisition. TPL was successful in getting the property under contract, and we have executed a purchase and sale agreement with them. And so now we're bringing this to Council for authorization to close on this. So here's the details. It's 1.1 acres on Lowell Lane near Terwilliger Parkway. The cost is being paid for by Parks SDCs. And Parks SDCs, as you know, are used to projects are eligible which expand our capacity. This is an expansion of our capacity and providing a new viewpoint. So $950,000 for the property and plus closing costs. $75,000 to reimburse Trust for Public Land for deconstruction of the house, and $10,000 for site stabilization. And just to mention, yes, there is a house on the property. It's over 100 years old. It is a property that it's a nice period piece in terms of being an older building. However, it is not part of our plans for developing a viewpoint. But what we have done is Trust for Public Lands has talked to the Rebuilding Center, and we have a relationship with them where that house can be carefully deconstructed and significant pieces reused and sort of incorporated into other projects. And I mentioned in the amendment the O&M request of nearly $1,900 a year. That's not including a building, so just so we're clear on that. Conditions of the acceptance, council approval of the purchase and sale agreement are needed, and TPL will be deconstructing the structures, and environmental and title conditions have to be met prior to closing. So with that, I wish to just thank the Friends of Terwilliger for energy and foresight and passion in bringing this opportunity to our attention. Again, great partnership. And really, Trust for Public Lands, willing to step in. They had a full plate and many things going on to be able to come in and say, yeah, we understand how significant that is. That will make this a priority. Just appreciate Don's work on our behalf. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Anton Vetterlein from the Friends of Terwilliger.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning, Mayor Hales and commissioners. I want to say that Friends of Terwilliger enthusiastically supports the purchase of the Eagle Point property. It's a property we've had our eyes on for many years. I got to know the former residents there, John Kenward and his wife, Mary Jane, late in their years. I just kind of felt like it was important to develop a relationship with them and, you know, talk to them about what they saw the future of their property being, and then since then I've gotten to know their son Kirk Kenward, who moved in there, and you know, I was always told them, you know, you got a wonderful piece of